We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hi guys, it's Jones. I'm going to get you to the latest edition of the Carolina Insider in just a second. Big time episode coming up. Wake Forest recap. Dante Calabria on the pod. We've got a great story time about bro hugs following the South Carolina game. A little Sebastian List. Who doesn't want this? Before we get there, a reminder. Don't let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any of the Tar Heel game action this year. Let LS Tractor help make short work of them. From normal yard maintenance to those larger projects, LS Tractor has the machine for you. Visit lstractor.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? Are you ready? Let's get to the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
From the
Mobile
Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider. From Learfield IMG College.
We are back. It's time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, what's up?
It's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
Can't even throw the ball.
It is indeed Tuesday, and we've got a busy show. We're going to look back at the matchup with Wake Forest. Tar Heel comeback runs out of time in Winston-Salem. We'll talk about that. We have a story time. We have an Adam's List. We have a guest. A little gentleman called Dante Calabria. Although he says Calabria.
He did.
Second straight guest where I've been all messed up from what I think the name is to what they say. And they would know.
But
because it's them.
Yeah, I do feel like he would probably know better than us. He's clearly in violation of the device I use to remember how to pronounce his name.
What is that?
I'll tell you. At the time that Dante C. was playing for the Tar Heels, I had a friend whose last name was spelled the same way.
Mm.
And she pronounced it Calabria, which was different than Dante. And that's how I could remember. Calabria went with Dante. Calabria went with my friend in high school. Well, if that was wrong, that means I was wrong.
That can't be.
Honestly, that doesn't make sense.
Adam, you're built on a tower of lies. Your entire life is built on a tower of lies. I hope you enjoy it.
We didn't pursue it with him like we did with Nate, though.
No, it wasn't as aggressive.
We're just going to let that slide.
We did this interview a while ago, and I was listening to it again already. You sounded a little sick. Were you sick when we were talking to Dante Calabria?
I think I was. But I just played through it.
So make sure you listen to that. See if you can tell how sick Adam really was.
We'll call him by the wrong name, and I'll be real wheezy. It'll be great.
So tune in. It's coming up soon. Before we get to the discussion about Wake Forest, let me remind you that the 15th annual Roy Williams Fast Break Against Cancer Breakfast is coming up. It's really not that far away. It's like a week and a half away, September 27th in the Smith Center. The event benefits UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center. There's an online auction if you can't make it to the breakfast. To register for more information, you can go to the website unclineberger.org/fastbreak. That's unclineberger.org/fastbreak. Or you can call 919-966-5905. 919-966-5905. Adam, it was a story of two halves on Friday in Winston-Salem. Carolina just could not do anything in the first half offensively. And then Wake got hot. Really, it wasn't even the whole half. Wake scored three touchdowns in the span of something like 6.5 minutes. And that was such a deep hole that once the Tar Heels started playing more like the team we have seen the first couple of weeks, they were down three scores and just not where you want to be. And so Carolina, to its credit, came back, played much better in the second half, particularly defensively, although Wake was a little more conservative. Then the offense really got going near the end, but Tar Heels quite literally ran out of time. Whether or not they should have or not, of course, is a different question. But Tar Heels just ran out of time, and I think we can talk about the straight football part of it in a second, but it was clear through the week, if you listen to Mac Brown, that he was concerned about what happening. And I don't know to that extreme, but I think he was concerned that, hey, the Tar Heels have had these two emotional games against teams that have a bigger name than Wake Forest, that Wake Forest was going to be fired up. This was their biggest game to that point of the season. It was at their place, even though it was probably 50-50, quite honestly. You and I were both there, and there were a lot of Tar Heels there. And I think Coach Brown was worried that his team could potentially come out flat on a little bit of a shorter week, a little bit banged up, which we'll talk about because we have a good tweet asking about some of these things. And you just saw that. And Coach Brown on Monday made a comment that I thought made sense. He said it wasn't that they didn't play hard. He said they just didn't have the same energy and the passion. And I do think that's two separate categories. And you saw that in the first half. And then when Carolina was able, and you rarely see this, they were able then to flip the switch a little bit in half number two. Some of that was the crowd helped them, the Carolina crowd. And I do think the Tar Heels played with that passion and energy and really looked good in the second half. But the hole was just too deep to get out of.
I think in some ways you realized what a good job the coaches had done the first 2 weeks when you watch those first three quarters or so, because you realized how close to potential Carolina has to play in order to be competitive with good teams. If they're at 50% of potential, they're getting beat.
Yeah.
It's not like this
is a thin margin of error right now.
Yeah. It's not the 1996 Tar Heels where they can kind of be interested and win 28-20. If they're kind of interested, they're behind. And it felt very much like playing a military academy or something, because every time Carolina did something wrong, there was Wake Forest to go, oh, yeah, we'll take advantage of that. That's great. A penalty? Perfect. That's what we need. A fumble? Yes, we will turn that into a touchdown. And so for 2.5 quarters, every single time Carolina did something wrong, it was exacerbated by the fact that Wake then did something that much righter to capitalize on it.
Yeah, I do think that – of course, we look at it from the Carolina perspective. I thought Wake Forest played really well. I'm not sure they're going to play at a much higher level than that. And I don't mean that as like a slap against them. I just thought they played really well. And their defensive numbers were really bad going into the game. And they were always, it felt like, in the right place, always made the tackle. They just really, I thought, played at a high level. And even Sage Surratt, who had that monster first half. And on the one long touchdown, Carolina got fooled by the play and was out of position, and they just got out-schemed on that play. I thought Trey Morrison was in position most times against Sage Surratt, and he just got the ball. And sometimes Trey Morrison knocked it away, and sometimes Sage Surratt made big catches. And with good players, that stuff's going to happen. So, yeah, I thought Wake Forest played at a very high level and played very well as a part of this discussion as well. you know, the Tar Heels, I do think there's a couple things from on the field that have to be better. One is third down conversions. Carolina's really low. I think it's 21% right now as far as third down conversions on the season. Clearly, that's a very low number. As the coaches explained a lot on Monday, and is something we've all heard before, it's not necessarily just third down that's hurting you. It's that you're getting in second and 12 and then third and 9, and those are harder to convert than third and 1. So Carolina just needs to find a little more consistency there in moving the sticks. They've been able to hit some big plays. They're top 20 in the country in explosive plays, however that is defined, plays of over 20 yards or something. But I do think that they are looking for some more consistency. They have not run the ball the last 2 weeks as well as they did that first week. They have not protected the quarterback well enough. Sam Howell, and some of it was on Sam. I thought he held the ball some. And for the first time, Adam, I thought he looked like a freshman for the first time for a little bit in that game. But Carolina needs to figure out a way to convert better on third down. They've got to protect the quarterback better, just be better up front on the offensive line. And as you said very correctly several weeks ago, I'm not so sure none of this should be a big surprise. It was never going to be Carolina goes from where it was starting this year to the Tar Heels are a top 10 team. There's going to be bumps and sidesteps and missteps along the way. And I think you had one of those this past Friday.
If you had told us a month ago that you could have Carolina be 2-1 after three games,
I think anybody would have taken it.
We would have said, that sounds great. Sign me up for that. Got a chance to come home and play at home to be 3-1 with Clemson coming to town. That sounds like a fine scenario. I think we've seen what Carolina can be at its very best, and we've seen what Carolina can be when it's not at its very best. And we're going to see both those things over the next couple of months, and it's what is the ratio between those two that'll determine eventually how this season is perceived.
So the final play in the ACC has since come out and say it was not adjudicated correctly. That, and Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, the way I have understood it is that the ACC was saying the call on the field was that forward progress was stopped before Michael Carter went out of bounds, and we all saw the screenshot where he very clearly stepped out of bounds with still 1 second on the clock. But that the ACC is saying that that forward progress was deemed to have stopped on the field, which, okay. Whether or not you agree with that or not, that's a judgment call by the official. But having said that, the clock should have stopped because it was a first down. Because remember, that was a fourth down play. And so Carolina had the first down. Clock should have stopped for them to reset the ball. Carolina, in theory, then has a chance to either snap it and spike it or snap it and have one more shot to the end zone. And I don't even know what you can do about that other than go, it is what it is. It was not done correctly. Just not what you want. But I think if Carolina could do it again, Michael Carter would have gotten out of bounds with 4 or 5 seconds left, as opposed to trying to pick up those last extra couple of yards. And even, you know, the play before that, I think, or two plays before, when Sam Howell had a throw and it was tipped back and right back into his hands. And I'm sure if he could do it again, he wouldn't catch it. But that's so hard to not do instinctively. So just some things that happen in the late clock. Carolina would have liked to have not been in that scenario, ideally.
I think a couple of clock things that I wanted to talk about. One, the fact that it ended up coming down to 1 second is credit to the way Wake Forest used the clock in the third and especially the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were doing absolutely what everyone says they want to do, but a lot of times doesn't execute, where they bled every possible second that they could. And that ended up mattering. If on one of those plays they had snapped it at 10 instead of 1, Carolina wouldn't have just had one more play. They might have had two more plays.
Mm-hmm.
So credit to them for doing it exactly the correct way. Not much you can do about that. They just did it right. Now, the other thing that I'm a little curious about, and I don't know if y'all observed this or not, but I went back and watched the tape, Jones, because I thought something was a little odd there in the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The clock still stops on first downs in college football, right?
Yes.
Okay. If you ever are inclined to go back and watch the tape, watch the fourth quarter. 12 minutes and 15 seconds left. Carolina completes a pass to Michael Carter. The umpire is waving his arms above his head to stop the clock. It's first down. The clock stops for 1 second. Before Michael Carter throws the ball to the official, for the official to then go mark it, the clock is restarted. at 9 minutes and 10 seconds. These are all in the fourth quarter. Wake Forest runs for a first down. The clock stops for 2 seconds. 7 minutes and 37 seconds left. Pass to De'Ami Brown. That's the long one.
Mm-hmm.
Clock stop for 2 seconds. 4 minutes and 46 seconds. That's when Wake threw the first down. You can see the quarterback running up the field. He hasn't crossed the 50 yet, and the clock has restarted. 3 minutes left. That's the third down scramble. The clock runs before the official even has the ball to the mark. All those plays are first down plays. I don't think that was officiated correctly. And so I was wondering where you get your clock operator.
Hmm.
And what I have discovered through intense journalistic research is Hume University Event Management supplies the clock operator. So that's not an ACC official. That's someone supplied by Wake Forest who in the fourth quarter had somewhere to be. Maybe they were going to Dewey's Bakery to get some sugar bread. I don't know. Maybe they had to be there before closing time. But things were in a rush. And just, you know, probably means nothing, but worth pointing out. This is just a fact. It's not an opinion. The referee was Jeff Heiser. The line judge was Richard Meisner. The side judge was Terry Hocker. Do you know what else all three of those gentlemen did?
What's that, Adam?
The 2015 ACC championship game against Clemson.
Onside kick.
Yeah, I remember some plays in that game that I thought were curious. So, who knows? All I know is, unless they're gentlemen with the same name, those three guys did the Wake Forest game, those three guys did the Clemson game. Who knows?
That was some fast spotting of the ball.
Well, you can see on the screen that the ball's not set.
Right.
And the official has to wind it.
Yep.
The clock operator, he operates the clock based on what the officials tell him to do.
That's what you're supposed to do, yes.
Right, right. So you're not supposed to just push it when you feel like, oh, it seems like it's been a good amount of time. You wait for the official to wind his arm, and then you hit the button. Who knows?
Okay, let's get to a tweet, because I think this is going to help guide where I want to go next.
Well, can I say one thing so I don't sound super whiny?
Yeah, of course.
With all that being said about the clock, just don't fall behind 21 to nothing.
Right.
If Carolina had played in the first half like they played in the second half, I would have been excited that the clock operator was in such a hurry, because the Tar Heels would have been ahead, and I would have wanted the clock to run fast. So all that stuff is just an odd condition, but the real problem was the play in the first half.
So Bobby Casey sent us a tweet and said, "Why are injuries such a problem in this program? Why is Carl Tucker nowhere to be found so far? Feels like a top tight end in the nation. Why is the three-headed monster in our running back room not being used as we expected? Sincerely, a frustrated fan." So I don't think Bobby is alone in some of these questions. Some of them are easier to answer than others. The Carl Tucker question is the easiest. Carl Tucker wasn't used in Wake Forest because he wasn't there. He was injured in the week of practice leading up to the Wake Forest game, and so he was not even in Winston-Salem with the team. Now, having said that, he only has one catch between the first two games, but I don't think anybody left those two games going, if the Tar Heels could just figure out how to get Carl Tucker the ball more, then they'd be winning these games by 10 touchdowns. Carl Tucker's a big part of what Carolina wants to do offensively. He's a really good tight end, and I think not having him hurt them on Friday, although the Heels have other good tight ends, Jake Bargus, Garrett Walston. In fact, Walston had a big-time catch on the two-point conversion. So the Tar Heels have some talent there, but Carl Tucker's the best one they have right now, combination of talent and experience. Had a big catch in the Miami game, if you remember, where he picked up a throw on third down, throws a little low, made a nice catch on it for a big play. So that one is easy to answer. Carl Tucker will be a part of what the Tar Heels are doing. He wasn't against Wake because he wasn't there. The three-headed running backs, you know, I think it's come down to Carolina feels as though Javonte Williams and Michael Carter are the two guys that they want to have the ball the most, and they have pretty much split carries through the first couple of games, and that they want Antonio Williams to be the third guy that comes in late in the game or is a change of pace or whatever it might be. And that leads to the first question, why are injuries such a problem in the program? I do think injuries were an issue the last couple of seasons, there's no doubt. I think right this second, where the Tar Heels are at this moment in time, and they did play a role against Wake Forest. Heels didn't have Jason Strobridge and Carl Tucker and
Patrice Renee
and others, Nick Polino. Some of that's going to happen in football. The bigger issue for Carolina right now is its lack of depth. I think some of those injuries came with the fact that the Tar Heels have played three Power 5 teams to start the season. They went on a short week from the Miami game to the Wake Forest game. And their main guys have played almost every snap of every game because every game has come down to the final possession, literally. And so when you mix three physical games that have come down to the very end with the fact that you're not real deep right now, and the way they're going to build that depth is by playing those young guys more, but they haven't wanted to play those young guys yet because the games have been so close that they don't have that same trust level by putting those guys in. All those things go together. It, to me, is a different scenario than the last 2 years where Carolina was having an enormous amount of injuries in games and practices all over the place. Why that happened, we can leave there because I think that's in the past. I don't think that's the same issue that Carolina is having right now. To me, the biggest issue is that they've played those physical games and they haven't been able to play a lot of guys just yet. Mac Brown said on Monday, he said it's something the coaches have talked about, and they said, we just got to do it. Just got to play guys. And will it cost you a play? Could it cost you a score? Maybe, but that long term, you got to get those guys in to get them better and to help lessen the load some on the front 11 guys on each side. And I think it's the biggest deal on the lines. I mean, it's not like a problem at wide receiver right now. The Tar Heels have a lot of good wide receivers, and I think you've seen a lot of them play, although they also have one injured in Antoine Green. So, but on the lines, that's where Carolina's got to start doing it some.
Well, and I thought the two biggest injuries that bit Carolina on Friday were Jason Strobridge, because there was just nobody Strobridge-esque behind him. And you could tell a noticeable difference in the kind of pressure Carolina got against a Wake Forest team that was probably susceptible to that, and the Tar Heels just couldn't create it because he wasn't out there. And then on the other side of the ball, Nick Polino not being there, nobody was sure how good Nick Polino was going to be at that position, but he looks like he was very good with things as mechanical as snapping the ball. I thought there were several times the snap was too low, and it seemed like that bothered Sam Howell. He couldn't get his eyes in the right place at the right time, and then the whole play shot. So I think in the middle of both lines, if you add those two players back, I think maybe you're looking at something different. But you don't get to do that. You just, as you said, have to have players behind them. And right now, Tar Heels aren't sure that they do.
Yeah, and I think, as we said with Brian, I think Brian Anderson's a fine player. He just hadn't played. I mean, that was his first start. And so you have to expect some of that kind of stuff is going to happen. That just goes back to, you got to build it up. And, you know, Jason Strobridge, that is not expected to be a long-term injury. He was expected to play at Wake. And so it was up until just minutes before the game started that that decision was made. Mac Brown said that he has had discussions with his training staff to make sure that in the future that would be known earlier than when it was known this past Friday. So, again, yes, there are some key injuries. I don't think it is the same deal that has been the issue these last couple of years, in my opinion. Maybe that's incorrect, but that's what I think right now. And again, Carolina hadn't had a game against XYZ State Tech A&M where they were up 35-0 in the third quarter and can start putting all your young guys in and take away a bunch of reps from the older guys and let them keep their bodies a little fresher. It's just the way the schedule was this year and the intensity of these games. I mean, these have been, think about that, three games that have quite literally gone down to the final possession every single time. So it is just how the season has been to this point.
And it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility. That's how the majority of the season is going to
be. Yes, the way the Tar Heels are right now, their team, and the way the schedule is built. I'll be really interested to see if Mac Brown keeps that Mercer game type of game where it is right now, which is in the next to last week of the year, or if he might want it a little earlier in the year. I don't know that answer Different coaches have different opinions on what to do with that type of opponent. And that's not to say Mercer's not any good, but it's certainly a game that Carolina would be expected to win. Where that game goes, I'll be interested to see if that changes some in the future. Okay, Adam, anything else from the game on Winston-Salem?
Now that it's been played, do you have any different thoughts on playing Wake as a non-conference game?
I still think it's a good idea. I mean, there was a lot of passion in the stadium on Friday. It's a game. I don't like playing on Friday. I don't like that.
I liked it on Saturday.
Well, yeah, it allowed you to watch games on Saturday, yes. But nothing changed my mind from what it was going into that game, which was, yeah, these are two teams that should play each other. And I do think maybe that's unique to this area just because there's so many teams that are so close to each other. Yeah, I can't, you know, maybe like Texas and Texas A&M, but they don't want to play. They don't want to play each other. Like, I think Carolina Wake would like to see each other more. It's a game that both fan bases, I mean, it was a jam-packed stadium. There were a bunch of people for both sides there. It makes sense. Play the game.
I think the only other plays that I wrote down that we didn't talk about, the Howell to Brown throw, more so in the stadium than on TV. In the stadium, that was a great throw.
Oh, yeah.
That was an NFL throw through three guys.
The throw on, I thought the two-point conversion throw, it was a little bit off his back foot, and he rifled it right down there to Garrett Walston. I thought that was a great play. I mean, Sam Howell looked like a freshman for the first half. But you know what else he did, Adam? He didn't complain when they put in Reuter just to give him a break. I thought that was a good move. He clearly was off. So give him a chance just to chill out on the sideline. Remember we talked about that last year in the Cal game, how the Tar Heels didn't have that option with Nathan Elliott, who was having a really poor first half? They had that option. Just put him on the bench. Let him chill for a second. Let Jace Reuter go get some snaps. Jace Reuter did fine. I mean, he got him off the goal line one time with a nice run, did a good job. And then it just lets you reset a little bit. And I thought both those guys handled it really well. Sam Howell came out and was much better in the second half, and you saw what we have already seen, and that's that he's super talented.
I think the most encouraging thing about Sam Howell is that what he's good at, you can't teach, and what he needs to improve on, you can teach.
Yeah.
That's a good combination.
Seeing more things and just getting more reps, it's all going to help him. This third game. And he almost did it again. I mean, Carolina had the ball with a chance to win.
Yeah.
Which, that brings my final thing. Carolina's not taking any silver linings and participation medals. But that's a game they could have lost 35-3.
We've seen them lose it 35-3.
Right. I mean, that it could have been that type of game had they not gotten their act together and looked like a different team. And again, doesn't matter. It's still a loss. But it didn't get out of hand. They brought it back to the point where they were the better team, I thought, in the fourth quarter. Unfortunately, ran out of time. Okay. I should have known, Adam, things were going to go poorly in this game. Now, I always say this, but I mean this. Like, it just didn't feel right before the game. Like, I didn't feel good about it, right? And then we're getting set up in the booth. And Jody Zoegner, statistician / spotter on the Tar Heel Sports Network, getting his stuff set up. And all of a sudden, I'm kind of looking off and I hear Jody go, "Oh, no!" And I look over. His iPad had tumbled out of the window, slammed screen first onto the bleachers down there at used-to-be Grove Stadium.
Oh.
Yeah, not good. So Jody went and got it, and he brought it back up, and it is obviously not in good shape. And I said, you should just head to the store and be like, I don't know why this isn't working anymore.
Do you guys see anything wrong with this?
This last update didn't hit quite right. But so that happens. Then right when we go on the air, so like we're going on the air. I mean, everything's been tested a million times before we go on the air. We go on the air and normally we have like the Bill Leslie whoosh bang, everything's getting going. And it's dead silence. And then all of a sudden in my ear, I hear Ben go, "We've had a complete crash of the computer. You just need to go ahead and start talking." That isn't what you want to hear from your engineer when you're starting on the air, Adam. So right at the beginning, the computer just crashed completely right when things were supposed to start.
Did you try to speak as though you were Bill Leslie and have Brian hum some music?
Why would I ever do our friend Bill Leslie, who's going to be in the Tar Heel Sports Network booth for this App State game, by the way?
Guaranteed win. Lock it up.
Yep. Why would I ever do him a disservice like that? So I should have known, Adam, that things weren't going our way.
Wow.
Then tried to go to our friends at Cookout after the game, and the line was so long that I didn't even go.
See, we had a very different game day experience because I just rolled into town like 30 minutes before the game, went to Dewey's Bakery.
No.
I love that place.
Yeah.
They've got new cookies that are awesome. Everybody knows about the sugar bread. Check out the cookies, my friend. And so we were having this big discussion on the way. My wife was like, we've got time to go by there. And I was like, no, we don't. And she's like,
you don't understand what it's like at formerly known as Grove Stadium. It's a hornet's nest of activity.
Well, here's what I've learned, and I'm 100% sure you're the same way. Because of our jobs, if the game starts at 6 and I'm not in my seat with absolutely everything I need in the ready position at 5.
Oh, yeah.
I'm freaking out.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So we left Dewey's at like 5:20.
Oh, that's...
And I was like, she was like, well, the GPS says it's going to be 16 minutes. And of course, I'm like, you can't trust that. What does Google Maps know that I don't know?
Yeah, that doesn't seem right, honey.
And so, of course, then we're sitting down at like 5:45 in our seat. And she's like, looks like we made it. I'm like, oh, just barely.
Yeah.
I need the skin of our teeth.
Yeah, like, I need to get my mind right now.
Are you... Well, do you ever go to games when you don't have an official role? You don't really.
I don't normally. And so now, I mean.
But like when your kids play, do you have to be there an hour early or you freak out?
I like to be there earlier than anybody else does, for sure.
I don't want to miss the tip-off, kickoff.
Yeah.
Whatever you start the game with.
Yeah.
I want to see that.
I want to be there.
And really, I want to see the flyover, the national anthem, which they always have at kids' soccer games. You got to be there for the flyover. I want to see all that stuff. I don't know why. They're gonna kick the ball whether I'm there or not. But I feel like I need to be there.
Yeah.
And I want some cushion.
Man. Adam, when that music doesn't hit, we've had a complete crash of the computer.
I bet that's what Phil Longo was saying into his headset about midway through the second quarter.
Guys, the computer's crashed.
Sam Howell, just talk.
Don't think we're going to be able to reboot this till halftime, boys. So Carolina App State coming up next. We'll talk about that on the next pod. That's a 3:30 kick, as is the Clemson game. We did learn that that game time as well on Monday. So next two games for the Heels at 3:30. Already sold out. Both games,
yeah.
Yeah.
And the Duke game
sold out.
Yeah. 3:30 is a good game time for home.
I like 3:30.
Yeah, because you can do stuff before the game, and then you can hang out in town after the game. That's a good game time.
All right, let's get to our conversation with Dante Calabria. We talked to, of course, Dante, member of the Tar Heels in the mid-1990s, was a big part of the 1995 Final Four team, was on the 93 National Championship team, didn't play a ton at that point in his career, and has been in coaching at some different stops since then, played for a long time after his time at Carolina, played overseas for a long time. We talked to him about that, coaching, and a whole lot more. And Adam, all-time hair in Tar Heel basketball history. I mean, he's
the captain of that team.
He's the captain of the all-time hair team, right?
Yeah, I think only competition is Coby White.
Oh, yeah. Different style. I mean, different types of hair, but both very recognizable in part due to their hair.
Well, and again, if you're one of those people who didn't live through the Dante era, you don't understand how much Dick Vitale talked about his hair.
Oh, yeah. Dante Calabria was like he could have been in a boy band. Like, that's the shrieks from the ladies when Don, I mean, he was a popular Tar Heel with the ladies, for sure.
Because of his personality.
Yes. And his sweet stroke from three, Adam. Let's get to our conversation with Dante Calabria. We'll come back. And actually, you know what? You just wait right there, Adam. Before we do that, let's get to our champions of the gridiron, where we highlight an MVP from the Tar Heels' previous game, brought to you by UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds to help keep you in the game at your very best. See their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. I'm going to Trey Morrison, and I know – is that what you were going
to – That's what I was going to do.
I know Trey Morrison, whenever you're a corner, you're going to look bad every now and then. And Jay Bateman even talked about it on Monday. He had a conversation with Trey before the game. He said, look, there's going to be a time or two where you're going to get beat, and there's going to be a time or two where you get the better of the receiver that you're going against, but we're putting you on him and go make it happen. And Trey Morrison, in what I know about him, and I don't know him super well, but just in how he plays and how he carries himself, he seems like somebody who enjoys that type of challenge and is one of those guys who can, if he has a bad play, can put it behind him and go right back up and still be that dude who's in your face and ready to guard you.
He got cooked in the first half,
yeah,
mostly by Sage Surratt. To the point,
and I'm going to say, I thought there were some of those catches by Surratt that were just, I thought Trey Morrison was there. And Sage Surratt just made, now the 52-yard touchdown, nobody was there. But the other ones, on a lot of those other catches, I thought Trey Morrison was in decent position, if not good position.
It was a rough enough half to the point that,
yes,
on the goal line, he was taken out, and the Tar Heels chose to put in Storm Duck.
Yes.
It had gotten to that point.
Well, and Storm Duck actually, remember, he made a nice play, didn't he? He, at some point, he made a nice stop,
yeah,
that led to a fourth down opportunity that the Tar Heels got a stop on.
By the fourth quarter, though, and I think what you're talking about, to Trey Morrison's credit, he had come back to the point that Carolina needed a big stop on third down. I think there was about 6 minutes left. You were 99% sure Wake was going to throw the ball to Surratt. They did, and he was right there and was able to – I don't know if he necessarily knocked the ball away, but his coverage was tight enough that the pass could not be completed.
Mm-hmm.
At the key moment in the game where Carolina absolutely had to have a stop, he came back and got it. That's what you need from a young guy. When you're playing young players, they're going to get beaten from time to time. Do they come back and make the play or not? And he did. So, since you went with Trey Morrison, I'll go another guy who we haven't mentioned, Noah Ruggles.
Yeah.
49-yard field goal.
Yeah.
Thought that position was going to be a little iffy. If he could consistently hit from 40-plus, you've got a little different element to the offense.
How about Ben Kiernan,
yeah,
from
shaky
Dublin?
Shaky at the start.
First kick, not what he wanted. After that, he was booming it back to Dublin.
Thunder Ben.
Now, he had more punts in this game than he had in the first two,
yeah,
games combined. That is not ideal. But I think what Mac Brown talked about, and I think we talked about on the second pod last week, was they've been asking him to do, in Mac Brown's opinion, too much. Like, they were asking him to directional kick and do all these different things. And for this game, they said, just go out there and kick. And he showed that he can go out there and kick. And so he's got the leg with some experience and game, just being out there some, he'll get better at the other stuff, being able to more craftily punt in strategic ways when you want that. But he clearly has the leg to be a high-level player at that position. So there were some, again, frustrating to lose. I didn't leave that game somehow bummed out that the Tar Heels were in big-time trouble. I just didn't feel that way.
I agree. Not a demoralizing defeat.
No, it's a team that is going to have some bumps, but it's a team that is growing, as right before our eyes, Adam. Just like Dante Calabria did back during his days in Chapel Hill. Let's talk to Dante. Come back. We have a lot more to do on the Carolina Insider.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
If it's interview time, that probably means we have another national champion on the podcast. Dante Calabria, member of the 1993 national champions. I think people think of you as 95 Final Four, but you were on the 93 championship team.
Yes.
Dante, nice enough to give us some time today. Dante, we really appreciate it. Catch us up on what's been going on in the world of Dante Calabria.
Got involved in coaching. I retired from playing in 2011 from Europe. And jumped right into coaching, and been jumping around different places, whether in high school prep teams, coaching Division I level, was an assistant at the NAI level to Rolly Masmino, then got the head job there at Kaiser University. Did some training, created some companies to do training, and then last year went to back to Italy to coach with Coach Larry Brown. And this year, fortunately, I was able to find another job in Division II with the former Carolina guy, Coach Butch Estes, down at Barry University. So that should be announced by the time this comes out.
Dante, that's a long playing career. I mean, to play all the way until 2011. What allowed you to stick around and to play for nearly two decades at the professional level?
I could shoot.
That's easy, right?
Obviously, I was fortunate. I could shoot the basketball, but very fortunate that I only had one real serious injury, and was able to come back and get over that. But my body held up well. It is a little different playing in Europe. There's a lot more practice and a lot more beating up of your body. So I was very lucky. Had some really good trainers, some good staffs that helped out and took care of you. But I got really into stretching. Did a lot of yoga. Did a lot of Pilates, which sounds really strange. But I really credit that some, because it helped with my hips, with my hip flexors. And always had issues with my lower back. But once I really got stretching, it kind of helped that out too. And I was able to just continue to play.
You mentioned you could shoot. Carolina fans, of course, know you could shoot. Why could you shoot? How did you get so good at that?
Man, I was, again, and I'll probably use this word a lot, I was real fortunate to have a high school coach. My high school coach was John Miller, who is the father of Sean Miller at Arizona and Arch Miller, Indiana. So I grew up with that family, and it was basketball every second. And I was shooting. I try to teach kids, in fact, at camp now, I try to teach kids that – you know, so many guys shoot from their shoulder as they're young kids, and I'm trying to tell them you got to get it up and show them techniques how to do it. I was doing that at 8 years old, and so it came early for me, and then I just repetition after repetition after repetition. We used to have study halls in high school. I'm sure everybody does, but our coach used to give us passes to get out of study hall to come down to the gym and shoot.
You were studying, just in a different way.
Exactly. But, I mean, you get all those repetitions in, and if you're doing it correctly, I mean, eventually you start to get a little better. And I always tell a story, and people laugh at me, but it's true. I was really the third best shooter on my high school team. Mm. That's how good these guys were, and that's how much we shot. I mean, another story, the gun machine. So the gun was invented by a guy from Youngstown, Ohio. And he and my coach were real good friends. I was using the gun as the guinea pig. We had that thing in like 1990. And they didn't sell it, I think, till 94. And so I had used that throughout high school. So we'd come into the gym, and you didn't even need a rebound. It was just coming right back to you. We'd take, I don't know, 150,000, 250,000 shots on the machine, and the guy would come and change it out and then bring another one. And then he would try to fix things that went wrong. So before he actually marketed it, he had it running real smooth, and we were the guinea pigs.
Nice. We're going to talk a lot about Carolina. I want to go back to coaching for just a second. You've coached now, as you said, NAIA level, Division II. What are some of the challenges that you've learned from coaching at that level and trying to be successful at a lower level?
Well, basketball is basketball. It's a general thing to say, but I really think there's a lot of truth to that. The problem, I think, from guys that play at a high major Division I school compared to an NAIA school, everybody thinks they're going to the NBA. That doesn't change. I was at Kaiser, and I had 13 guys on the roster. All 13 were going to be first or second round draft pick. So that doesn't change. But what does change is a lot of the physical ability or the fundamental ability. At that level, you don't have both. And sometimes you don't have either of them. You're just playing hard, and you're an aggressive – you're a 6'5", 5'5" man that is just aggressive and goes against rebounds. And so it actually is great development for the coach, because you have to understand each individual guy and understand where he fits into what you're trying to do, and then adjust what you're trying to do to make him be the best that he can be. And it's a little more difficult at that level to do it than it is probably at the higher level. Obviously with the more talent, things like that. But I was fortunate, again, to have an All-American center who was a 6'10", 6'11 kid that was in the Army, came to Kaiser afterward and was phenomenal. But he couldn't shoot the ball outside of 5 foot. Couldn't dribble right or left hand. But he could rebound. He could dunk. He could lay it in, and he could block shots. And he ran the court like a madman. And then I had a bunch of guys that could shoot the ball on the outside. And we played like that, and we ran, and we tried to play transition. Played a little bit of Coach Smith's point zone defense with a little bit of adaptation because I used to tease our guys. We had a couple guys playing that I really think if they were guarding their shadow, that the shadow would get open. So our man-to-man didn't really work out too well. But the kids really worked hard. They were great kids. And the other thing is you got to stay on top of the academics, probably more so there than you do here. But this is another thing. Our kids, I mean, we made it rewarding so they would go to class and everything. We finished with a 3.51 GPA.
There you go.
For basketball, which is unheard of.
Adam, it sounds like you could be a five-man at NAIA.
Yeah, I can do everything Dante just said. Can't shoot outside of 5 feet.
Yeah, that's right.
The 6'10" part in dunking, that part is going to be
shot
more
blocking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Intimidation, that's my game. Your last stop, as I think you mentioned, coaching, was with Larry Brown in Italy.
Yes.
He's a very interesting guy, it seems like, because he's been so successful in so many different places, but there have been so many different places. What did you learn about him being in close proximity to him for a season?
Listen, I had a crash course on basketball with Coach Brown. 5 months together, a lot of time every day together. Just listening and asking questions, and then we would just start talking. Coach has been successful wherever he's been, and sometimes it took to the second year. A lot of times he took over teams. I think he told me, with the exception of Detroit, he took over teams that had losing seasons or were losing. And so he has to, you know, it takes him a little time, but he gets that culture change, that mentality that he wants, gets players that he wants that does what he wants them to do, and then it's straight up. And we did stuff in practice, and we talked X and O's. I mean, it, for me, invaluable experience. Coach Brown is a great guy, always the smartest guy in the room, but you know, don't tell him I said that, but he is. he's phenomenal to just be around and to listen and to learn from.
Take us back to when your relationship with Carolina started and kind of how all that process played out for you.
If I'm correct, I think I was playing in an AAU tournament, and I can't remember if I was going into 10th grade or going into 11th grade. I want to say I was going into 10th grade in San Antonio, Texas. Hmm. And Coach Ford happened to be there, and I probably had about the 6 or 7 best days shooting of my life during the tournament. I averaged probably like 35, 40 a game. Couldn't miss. Yeah. I mean, I remember one was going out of bounds out by the old hash mark. And I just took a step. I was running to go get it to save. I took a step, caught it, turned in midair, and just kind of heaved it to the basket right in. It was one of those weeks. And,
yeah.
And they started recruiting me there and just following me. And then, you know, as time progressed, I improved. And the need, what I could bring to the team, to the program, was available when I was graduating high school. So it was a good fit. And I visited a few schools, but I just decided this was the place I wanted to come to.
As you mentioned, you grew up in a basketball hotbed, Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, for those who don't remember. When Dean Smith comes to Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, what's that like?
Well, it was, lack of a word, it was just a surreal experience. He walks in the gym, and it was funny because I had told a lot of my friends, and I said, hey, Coach Smith's coming today. And they're like, nah, he's not coming. No, he's coming. So a lot of my friends, so we usually don't have anybody in the gym to pick up whatever. There's like 100 people there sitting. And Coach came. He actually came a couple times and became friends with Coach Miller and just knew everybody and communicated with different teachers and stuff like that. I mean, he was a phenomenal guy, and but the feeling is strange. It's strange to be on the court with him over the shoulder, knowing that he's watching you and looking at you, and deciding, hey, are we going to offer this guy coming to North Carolina? It's not a little bit of pressure, but you know, I'm one of those guys that I prefer to have that rather than not have any pressure. So
right, what did you learn from him, from Coach Smith? What impact has he had on you?
He impacts you on a daily basis, really. basketball, of course, but off the court, so many different things we used to talk about in practice, or if you'd go have a meeting with them, and we always had thoughts of the day that we would elaborate on and talk about as a group. But I can remember playing in Europe. I was playing in France at the time, and I was in Paris just walking around, and my phone rings, and it's Coach. Coach asked me, well, how's it going, this and that? It was towards the end of the season. And he's asking me, well, what's the story for next year? Well, Coach, I don't know. I got a couple of different things. Well, I know a guy there. I'm going to make a phone call. I mean, always. And it wasn't just me. It was with every single guy. And he became, over the course of time, basically like a father. And he had a ton of kids, man, and took care of every one of them. And that's just the type of guy he was. If you ever needed some or ever had to pick up the phone and ask a question or had something that you needed to talk about, he would stop what he was doing and get your call. And he was a special guy. I mean, they don't make that breed. And there are not too many that ever were like that, but they don't make them anymore. It's different.
As we talked about, you were on the 93 championship team. When I take the roster from 93 on paper and show it to my son and then show the Michigan roster from 93, he doesn't understand how Carolina won that game. What made that 93 team so good?
Just the unity of the team. I don't want to say we didn't have any stars, man, because we really did. I mean, George played a ton in the NBA. George was phenomenal, George Lynch. Eric in college is a beast. You know, at that point, there weren't a lot of people that could defend Eric in the low post. You had Derek Phelps, probably one of the best defensive players in the history of Carolina, and offensively is underrated. Donald Williams, you know, coming off screens, hitting open jumpers. Brian Reese, phenomenal. I mean, Pat Sullivan. You had a lot of guys that could really play. But for one reason or another, everybody in that team just kind of meshed together and played a role. And defensively, that team was ridiculous. Henrik Rode was another one.
Yep.
People don't remember Henrik, but Henrik was a phenomenal player. Played for years and years in Europe and made the German national team for a lot of years. I think he's actually coaching the German national team now. And a lot of those guys just had such a basketball IQ. I can just speak for myself that when I was on the court and defending, I put every pressure that I could on the ball because I knew if the guy beat me, I had my teammate there. And that's the kind of confidence and trust that we had in each other. And a lot of times that's such a great tool. I mean, it's greater than talent.
So – early to mid-90s, Dante Calabria, it's like heartthrob Dante Calabria at Carolina. What was that experience like?
It was different because
– Adam, you and Adam can talk about this if you want to.
I was going to say,
yeah,
I bet.
Yeah, two big-time heartthrobs.
coming from where I'm from, you know, there's so many pro sports and so and high school basketball is not – I know you said it was a basketball mecca, but it's not. It's a football mecca. Beaver Falls, Western Pennsylvania, at that time was football heaven. And so we were the odd guy, my high school team. And then coming here, you don't really understand as an outsider that at that time this was the pro sport. This was the thing. It was either Duke, Carolina, NC State, Wake Forest. And you don't realize what that entails and what that brings as you being a player. And the fan base, especially at Carolina, is you know, they're enormous and they're great. So it was different. It was an adjustment for me. I can remember walking down the street on Franklin Street first couple weeks I'm here, and people are saying hi to me, and I'm like looking. Who are you talking to? I don't even know who you are. But over the course of time, you adjust and you understand the friendliness of people and the interest of just the program and of Carolina basketball. And it's a neat thing, and it's something that I definitely look back on, and you know, it was a special time and a special I say the word all the time, fortunate. I was very fortunate to be brought into it and to experience it and to learn from it.
Do you remember the first time you heard Dick Vitale talk about you? Because he loved you.
He used to say some things, but I don't remember when it started. I know by the time I was a junior senior that he was, you know, always honored with shooting and stuff like that. And they always used to talk about the hair, which is now I don't have as much, but I don't recall exactly, but just on the sidebar, you guys would have loved the hair. And when I was playing in Europe, I don't know if you've ever seen it. I had some hair back
then. Nice. Just took it to another level.
Yeah, it was the soccer style, soccer player hair.
There you go. That 95 team, we spoke to Pierce Landry a couple of weeks ago and talked about that 95 team, just the talent level on that team, of course, with Sheed and Stack and everybody. Just, I'd be interested in what you remember about that journey that year, what made that team so good, and then, of course, the disappointment there in Seattle in the Final Four.
That team was thin. There was always, for me, there was always the being nervous about injury. I had bad ankle that year. Donald had some injuries. Rashid went down once or twice. Jerry was a warrior. He played almost through anything. And Jeff played through almost anything. And then after that, you know, Shimon was there. Shimon was not what Shimon became. Shimon was a phenomenal player. But he was able to come in at that point, get some experience, and really contribute to that team. And we really needed him. Pierce, another guy, as a walk-on, who – could have been a scholarship guy. He was that good. Came in and really played a phenomenal role on that team. Serge really stepped up his game that year. And then you had some other guys, a guy like Ed Geth, who came in, played some minutes. Mm-hmm. David Neal stepped in one time when Jeff wasn't able to play. David Neal, walk-on, comes in and plays. And granted, he's not Jeff McGinnis, but sure, he plays everything that he can give, and he's a great guy, and he works his butt off. So we had a lot of guys like that, but my thing on that team was I was always nervous somebody getting injured, because one injury on that team, it really changes things around. But we were lucky. Coach did a good job of adapting the style of play to utilize Jerry and Rashid more, with Jerry playing the four and me playing the three. We didn't have size. We weren't going to, you know, dump the ball inside constantly except to Rashid. So the style changed. Defensively, we had to play a lot more zone just to stay out of foul trouble, mm-hmm, and to kind of keep guys from getting too tired. But that team, talent-wise, was sickening. Some of the things that Jerry did that year, some of the things Rashid did. I mean, Donald would go off sometime and just sat and watch. You're on the court, but you're like watching, going, whoa. But then we get to Seattle. I go 1-for-10. I thought I played a really good game, just couldn't put the ball in the ocean. Jerry gets hurt right in the beginning, and with all those things happening, we're still right there. And just wasn't meant to be at the end.
Didn't Michael Jordan come to practice at one point that year?
Yeah, I believe that's when he was coming back to play. The second time with the Bulls, I believe. Mm. And he would come and practice. I don't remember how long it was. I want to say it was like maybe 2 weeks or less than 2 weeks or 3 weeks, something like that. But he was practicing with us, and he would be on the blue team all the time. So the blue team got instantly better.
Upgraded their talent a little bit there.
Just a little bit. But, yeah, that was a great experience to have him there and just to see how he competed all the time and how he wanted to win and how we reacted and competed right back was good. And I think that helped us later on down the season, playing against Georgetown, playing against Kentucky, who was stacked.
Yeah.
I think that year we got behind, I want to say, to Iowa State in the first round by like 19. But we were able to fight through it. And I think that stretch with him there and competing helped us in that aspect.
How did it go with Michael Jordan and young Jerry Stackhouse, who has never met anyone he couldn't dunk on the same court together? How did that go?
No, they went at him, and they even would play one-on-one sometimes after practice for hours. And listen, it was great for Jerry, and I'm sure for Michael it was good too, coming back and getting in shape and playing against, you know, a talented guy that really wanted to go at him. But Jerry was relentless, man. That's what made Jerry. He just relentless guy.
You mentioned had a tough day shooting in the Final Four game against Arkansas. As a shooter, how do when you're in the game and it's just not going the way that you want it to, how do you keep doing other things to try to help your team and be successful when you do have a 1-for-10 or 1-for-12 kind of day?
Well, this is just coming from me.
Sure.
I don't consider myself a shooter. I'm a player. I can shoot it. But I do a lot of other things. I'm able to put on the floor. I made a lot of assists, being able to put the ball where it needed to be. I was defensively in the right position. I could box out, rebound. So the other parts of the game, I never really was concerned with. I was going to do it. I was going to work as hard as I could. I mean, I was helps out. I was taking a charge or doing something.
Right.
And I learned that from high school with my high school coach, that there wasn't – you just didn't do one thing. You did everything. And so I never had a problem. When the shot was going, I still did the other things, or at least tried to. And when it wasn't going, I tried to. So I played the same style and same way. But to be honest with you, the only way I know how to get out of something like that is that the next time you get open, you shoot it. And I used to put up enough shots that I felt I earned it to take the shot. So yeah. It wasn't like I was just coming into the game and shooting. I mean, in practice or after practice in the evening at on the court, I was always in the gym shooting. And so, you know, even if you miss five in a row, that just makes it better for the next five. You know, the mentality. And if you speak to anybody that can really shoot the ball, that's the mentality. It's, I can miss 12 in a row and I'm still open. I'm shooting. It's just not in your head. You're I don't want to say you're born that way, but it's just what's in your mind.
We've talked on here before about how we don't think people understand what a good life there is playing basketball in Europe if you end up with the right teams. You've actually done it, whereas we have not. What do you think people don't realize about the career and not just the basketball side, but kind of the whole life side that you can have playing basketball in Europe for a long time?
Yeah, the lifestyle is really a nice lifestyle. I was fortunate to play on teams in Italy. I played 12 years in Italy, 1 year in Greece, 1 year in Spain, and 2 years in France. And the lifestyle is great. You know, you're learning different cultures, different languages. You're putting yourself in a different environment, so you have to adapt. And I'll be 100% honest with you. I love it over there. And I spent most of my adult life from 22 to 37 there. And it was actually a tough adjustment for me when I came back and retired from Europe to come back to the States. It took me a good year and a half, 2 years to fully get back into the flow of how things go in the States. But it does depend on your club. It depends on your city. It depends on the people that you're with. It depends on your teammates, because you rely on a lot of other people to help you in the beginning. Now, as you get older and the more years you're there, it becomes you can do things as much as you want on your own. But in the beginning, some guys get over there for the first 3 months. No one's there to help them. They're in a crappy club, or, you know, their teammates are thinking they're going to take their minutes or take their points, and they don't want to hang with them or teach them anything. And it's miserable. And you quit and you come home. Other guys like me get into a good spot. Things go well your first year. Next thing you know, it's I'm just going to go over. I'm gonna make a career over it. And but the basketball, the level is high. I'm sorry. Depending on the situation, you can play. There's places you can play in England, Ireland, Finland, okay, where the guys you're playing with, basketball is like a second job. They go to work during the day, so it's not really professional. But when you get into the higher level leagues, such as a Spanish ACB or ACB or the Lega Serie A in Italy, or the top level in Greece, when you're getting in those countries and you're at the top level, the competition is incredible. Just to give you an idea, I was playing in Treviso, and Ettore Messina was my coach.
Mm-hmm.
We're playing Barcelona. They've got Paul and Marc Gasol. Pau Gasol only plays 10 minutes. Marc Gasol doesn't get off the bench. There's so many guys that can play and is so talented and shoot the ball and go by and make moves, hit the open guy. The talent level is incredible.
You said when you retired, came back to the United States, it took a little bit of time to kind of readjust. What kind of things did you have to readjust to?
The funniest one was I was coaching at Wilmington. I got the job in coaching with Wilmington. We all went to lunch. It was the first time I went to lunch with everybody. And we're sitting there, we're eating, whatever. And then all of a sudden, everybody's like, well, we got to go. And I'm looking at the watch. It's been like 25 minutes. I was like, what do you mean we got to go? Like, we got to get back to the office. I'm like, 25 minutes? You know, because there, the lunch, everything shuts down 12:30, 2:30, sometimes to 3:30, depending what country you're in. No rush. But that was one. I mean, you know, I like to say to people, and it's a general statement, but In Europe, people work to live. So the meal is important. When you go to dinner, it could be 3 hours. You're at the restaurant. Most of those places are not, they don't rely on tips like in the States. Everything is a service industry. They're not service industries. They make money, whatever they make as a waiter. So they're not worried about the table flipping, you know? So there's no rush.
Right.
You're amongst your friends. You're amongst people. You're enjoying. It's an enjoyable meal. Whereas in the States, it's quick. You know, you go to dinner, sometimes it's 25, 30 minutes, 40 minutes with lunch. But I like to say they work to live, where it's vice versa here in the States, where people live to work. So their whole day is based upon their work schedule rather than family time. Or, and I don't mean everybody. I'm being very general. But that's the kind of comparison that I make between the two.
What are Dante's travel gyms, cities or places where you played or lived that people might not know about, that if somebody's going over there, you say, oh, you got to go here?
One of my favorite cities in Europe is Firenze in Italy, Florence. Great, great place. Old architecture. If you're an architecture student or love architecture, it's unbelievable. Just a phenomenal city. Treviso is a really fascinating city. It's near Venice. It is also with Lucca, which is another city, but that's in Tuscany. They're one of the few cities in Italy still with the wall around from the medieval times. Mm. So it's a unique situation to go and check out. Let's see. Where I was just at, Torino's a phenomenal city. Then you get down to the south, you get along the hill of the boot down by Bari and Brindisi and Taranto, and they're all nice places. Sicily's phenomenal. One of my favorites, and people in the States seem to think it's dangerous, is Napoli. I played my last season was in Napoli, and it was probably the best time I've ever had. I loved Napoli. It was great. Everyone's talking about, oh, but it's dangerous, pickpocket. Well, I mean, it's not nearly as dangerous as some of the places here in the States. But as far as outside of Italy, I love Moscow. Incredible, incredible city. It's just so cold. Vilnius in Lithuania is a nice city. Malaga in Spain. Mm-hmm. Barcelona, beautiful, beautiful place. Taul, up in the north of Spain, where you actually have green and grass and trees, is beautiful. Salonika in Greece. A lot of
keep going if you want them to, Adam.
A lot of nice places.
I bet if we could go to Italy for like a week with Dante and Angelo from IP3,
yeah,
we would be like the kings of Italy. We would meet everyone in the country, yeah, and we would eat the best food.
Could you see yourself? Could you see yourself going there again or living there again? It just seems like, just in watching you talk about it, it seems to make you so happy just thinking about it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah,
it's funny that you mentioned Angelo, because funny story is I'm playing in Napoli, and I didn't even realize that at the time, but he's right from where I was playing. So he's from a place called Monte di Procida. It's right like 10 minutes from Napoli, and I was playing in a city called Sant'Antimo. My coach was from Monte di Procida. Hmm. They grew up together. So one day I come out to shoot early, and I'm looking, and I look twice, and it's Angelo sitting watching, coming for the game. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I was just like, what? And he's telling me the whole story. So a lot of the guys that I was talking with and hanging out with, they grew up together with Angelo and his brother. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's a small little city.
What is what's next for you? Are you still enjoying coaching? You still want to stay involved? What do you think are your next steps?
I'm going to go down to Barry University with Coach Estes. And I'll be assistant there this coming season. But I love basketball. It's been really good to me, and I try to, as much as I can, give back. I had a lot of people take time with me and teach me and work with me, and I feel obligated to try to help as many as I can, kids. But it's definitely something that I want to continue to do, and looking forward to getting back on the sideline, and especially with Coach Hess. Coach Hess is a good guy. And I really enjoy spending time with them, and I'm looking forward to the season with them.
Our interview with Dante Calabria brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. You know that texting while driving. I smoked that five-second challenge, by the way.
Yes,
yeah,
six.
Yeah. Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At highway speeds, that's like driving the length of an entire football field with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina would like for you to stay safe behind the wheel. Don't text and drive. Go to trustedchoice.com/goheels. Trustedchoice.com/goheels. Find an independent insurance agent near you to learn more.
In the five-second challenge, you mentioned Emory Simmons, and he went out and got a catch against the Demon Deacons.
First catch of his career.
Probably inspired by the fact that you had brought him up on the pod.
More to come from that youngster. Also, the pod's brought to you by Pinehurst and the Pinehurst Brewing Company, located in the historic steam plant building in the village of Pinehurst. You looking for great golf and great beer? Like, we can just say beer now. We can just say beer now like it's nothing.
Beer, beer, beer.
Beer, 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 beer. Beer's being sold in Keenan. It's like,
I'm a beer born, I'm a beer dead, and when I die, I'll be beer, beer, dead.
Visit Pinehurst. See what's on tap. I bet it's beer. Adam, how about your list?
You know what kind of list this is.
What's on the top of Adam's list?
Up in horsey heaven, here's a thing.
Brought to you by Top of the Hill.
You trade your legs for angels' wings.
Where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
And once we've all said goodbye.
This is a pod throwback.
Okay.
First down lasers.
Oh.
Did you see the Panthers-Bucks?
No. Do they have first down lasers at Panthers-Bucks games
No,
now?
But they needed one. You didn't see this clip on the internet? Do you ever go on Twitter?
How do I log on? But my mom's on the phone. I don't think I can do it.
So the ball was spotted on the sideline, and then they threw it to the middle of the field.
Oh, no, I did see that. And then he spotted it like half a yard farther ahead.
Which gave them the first down.
Yeah.
You know how that wouldn't have happened?
First down lasers.
First down lasers.
So if you're a newer pod listener, we've had – I mean, this was very early in the pod life.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed we didn't add it in the pod 200 song, actually, now that we're talking about it.
Adam Maybe and pod I, 400.
Yeah, it's coming soon. Adam and I pontificated that they needed to have – this was really Adam's idea, and I just totally jumped on board and agreed with it because it makes total sense. Why don't you have lasers for the first downs?
Yeah.
They just shoot them right in between the things if you have to.
Yeah.
It's super easy.
Why do we mark it by hand in 2019?
Clearly there's lasers that can do this.
I'm not saying we need robot refs, although maybe we do.
Yeah.
I'm saying first down lasers.
That's all we need.
It's so simple. Put it right in the chain.
Yeah. It's a great idea. Adam, it's a great idea. You should patent that and go figure out how to do it and then never work another day in your life, sir.
I'm here today asking for 10% of my company, first down lasers.
FDL.
I've brought you all a sample.
You took care of the stormtroopers, thank goodness.
Here's a little behind-the-scenes pod knowledge.
Oh.
When we discussed the basketball schedule on last week's pod, we had an advanced copy.
Yeah, we did.
Of the schedule.
Yeah, we did.
And on that schedule.
Oh, I've never felt more powerful.
You're all my puppets. Clemson, you will go to Pittsburgh. Noon on a Tuesday. The schedule we had a few more times than the schedule that came out.
Yeah, it did.
Which, if it had one time, would have been more than the schedule that came out as far as ACC games.
Had to heavily edit our conversation about the schedule.
We had some great points.
Yeah.
Now they're all gone.
But I had to take them out because we were talking about times that weren't allowed to be talked about.
Put the times out on the schedule. Put...
You
You got me so angry that I knocked my headset off trying to get your attention. Here. There. Those are my brand new windscreens taking that shot. Put the times on the schedule. Why aren't you putting the times on the schedule? You've had months and months and months to put the times on the schedule. And Adam, here's the other thing. It's not like there's that many time windows.
If it's a Monday night game, the game's at either 7 or 9. Those are the times.
You could even put 7 or 9 on there, and it would be better than what it was.
What about 7/9? Why would you choose to put out a 20-game conference basketball schedule 2 weeks two months before the season starts with no times? At least when the football schedule comes out with no times, it's 7 months ahead of kickoff.
Right.
This is 2 months ahead of tip-off. You can't put any times on there. That's not a Carolina decision. So don't misunderstand.
No, no,
Carolina
no.
didn't sit there and go, I don't think we're going to tell people when these games are.
Oh, no, no, no. Not a Tar Heel decision.
That's a conference and ESPN, which are basically the same thing, decision.
You know what this feels like to me, Adam? It feels like I don't even want this. Like, you did want the schedule.
Yeah, I did.
But then you didn't want the TBA and the reveal.
Well, and we are people who are going to get angry emails and tweets from people who can't find these games when they're listed as any ESPN network. Well, that could be about 6. Can you narrow that down at all? Can I rule out the U? Is the U still in play? If it's going to be on the ACC network, just tell me now so I can get my mind around it.
Breaking news, Adam.
Okay.
We received an updated men's basketball schedule on Monday.
Get out of town.
Yep. With some a little more clarification on times and networks. So what I really don't get is why it all had to be TBA on Thursday, but then on Monday they can send out the times.
What's the difference in Thursday and Monday? Why don't you just wait till Monday for the whole thing?
I'm unclear.
I'm glad you got that because I didn't.
Well,
congrats.
I've never check it now. I've never felt more powerful.
Maybe they only send it to all ACC voters.
Yeah, no big deal. Oh, I see Coach Williams is on this email, Adam.
To Coach Williams, two. Jones.
Two peas in a pod. Coach Krzyzewski, I see you're on here too. Brad Brownell, just all of us fine basketball coaches and observers.
A bit of a local news reading.
Is this the one we were sent?
Yes.
I loved it.
This is an all-timer. Intrepid readers sent this to us, including my wife. The headline is, quote, missing, end quote, woman, mystery solved. This is from the QMI agency, a reputable news source.
Yeah.
A group of tourists spent hours Saturday night looking for a missing woman near Iceland's, Elgja Canyon.
You've been to Iceland? Get it right.
I didn't go to the Elgja Canyon. Only to find her among the search party. The group was traveling through Iceland on a tour bus and stopped near a volcanic canyon. Okay. Soon, there was word of a missing passenger. The woman, who had changed clothes, didn't recognize the description of herself and joined in the search. Brianna! Brianna! Did you fall in the canyon? But the search was called off at about 3 a.m. when it became clear the missing woman was, in fact, accounted for and searching for herself.
That's a good one. That is a good one. Look, when they said that they were looking for this woman wearing a blue shirt and khaki shorts, she wasn't wearing that anymore on her.
my shirt's green.
I'm wearing jeans now.
I know I'm 5'4", have blue eyes and blonde hair.
And my name
is Brianna.
I know that's my name right there.
That's a totally different person.
Brianna Natron Means right there. That's me. Calabria. But there could be many of this nomenclature.
Brianna, you are such an idiot.
Hey, you know who else needs a Brianna? Florida State.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Florida State.
Yeah, what were you doing?
Florida State, stop getting penalties.
You know what was so striking about that game was there was never one moment in the fourth quarter when I thought Florida State was going to win.
Yeah.
Times have changed. Charlie Ward isn't taking that shotgun snap anymore.
Nope. Warrick Dunn isn't going to take that handoff.
No.
Derek Brooks isn't going to come sack your QB. Is that all for your little Sebastian list, Adam?
I wanted to give a what up
to
Josh Beal. B-E-Y-L. You think?
Bail.
All right. He sent us a
tweet. We have everything. Josh has sent us stuff before and we can never remember.
I think that's right. So, Josh, we still can't. Josh B, what up? He sent us a tweet. We've got a new listener.
Oh, yeah.
Charlotte McKay B. Great choice on the middle name right there. Really appreciate you naming her in honor of a close pod friend slash family member. But congrats to the B family. And look forward to Charlotte cheering on the Tar Heels.
Like she's wearing little baby Tar Heel socks in the picture they sent us. Ah, oh, babies. Harry Pugliese sent us a baby. She's got a little baby divided thing on.
Yeah.
Mom's a Wake fan. Harry's a Tar Heel fan.
Oh, Harry.
Sorry, Harry.
It's a tough Friday night. Basketball season's coming, Harry.
Yep. Adam, anything else from you?
No.
Want to give a little what up? John Howes, who sent us a short video of himself using the Coke, the new fancy Coke machine.
The freestyle machine.
Yeah, the freestyle machine, and asking it for a Dr. Pepper.
That was so funny.
And the machine shockingly not responding, and he said, help, it's broken. There was an email I wanted to read for a story time. So a reminder about story time. CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com, CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com. We always invite your Tar Heel stories. It can really be about anything, as long as it has some kind of Tar Heel connection, and we always like to read them here on the pod. So, Adam, you, sir, Mr. Goosehonkers thought for sure the next time that he was going to spread his wings and fly, it was going to be in the new Pod World headquarters, but no, sir. Right here back in Mobile Pod World headquarters, we can still get Mr. Goosehonkers fired up because Dusty Tompkins' mini story time starts like this. My wife, Laura, and I, that's Dusty's wife, not my wife,
right,
went to the game Saturday, and needless to say, we were ecstatic to be there and with the outcome. He's talking about the South Carolina game in Charlotte. It was just an awesome day, despite the brutal heat on the Carolina side of the stadium. I still don't get why the Tar Heels were the home team and in the sun for that game. During the game, we befriended two recent Carolina grads that were sitting beside us. Just all one big family.
I'd expect that from Dusty.
When the game was over, Dusty turned to one of the two guys on his immediate right, and tears were running down his face. I like this guy already. I bypassed the high five, went in for the bro hug. Then his buddy joined in on the other side. I have tears running down my face, Dusty, for this giant bro hug. So he said it wasn't just Coach Brown. The emotional release of that moment was palpable throughout the stadium. With the bro hugging behind, just the thought of three-man bro hug crying over the Tar Heels getting a big win. Just a normal Saturday.
Season opener in August.
Well, with the bro hugging behind them, he said they began exiting the stadium where the obligatory high-fiving of strangers ensued and the shared exchanges of go Heels, go Heels. As we got outside the stadium, an angry South Carolina fan spotted that I was wearing Carolina blue shoes, shorts, shirt, and hat. Go all in, Dusty. He said, my choice of single color head to toe apparently rubbed this gentleman the wrong way. So he chested up to me and yelled in my face, you look like a 12-year-old girl.
Burn! Dusty, I'm so glad that you were able to recover from this sick burn to listen to the pod.
Confused as to what that even meant, Dusty gave him a wry smile and replied, okay, and walked right past. Just as soon as Dusty maneuvered past him, he saw a very tall man that was none other than Mr. Leaky Black. Dusty even put the little train emoji in the email. He said, I looked way up at him and said the first thing that came to my blown mind, which was, Leaky, what's up, baby? We high-fived and exchanged the hearty go heels. Dusty said his day was surely made. See, that's how it should be after every game, Adam.
Yeah.
After every game, you should be so happy that you have a giant bro hug with dudes you barely know. You can passive-aggressively defeat the angry South Carolina fan because it doesn't matter to you. Your insults mean nothing to me. Gamecock. And then you see the one, the only Leaky Black. What, I mean, come on. What a day.
That story was like the Jim Valvano speech. Not the Spot of Ill, but the ESPY speech.
He cried.
I cried. I laughed.
You thought.
I thought. It had everything. I bro-hugged. I saw Leaky. What else do I need?
Dusty, consider yourself lucky, sir. That is what a sequence of events.
It's so difficult to respond to the angry opposing fans with the short but sweet, okay, as Dusty
yeah.
did.
Okay.
Or give them the go heels and then just on about your merry way. But it seems so much cooler later. But it's hard to do it in the moment.
Yeah.
A lesser man than Dusty would have tried to come back and said, well, your mascot, sir, is a medically altered chicken. But that wouldn't have been the right thing to do.
Yeah, he kept his wits and his cool.
That's right.
Kept his wits about him and kept cool.
I like to think that Leaky was watching from afar, that exchange, and he nodded knowingly and said, I'd like to meet that gentleman, and then he made it happen.
But Adam, that's why we love sports, right? The whole day for Dusty was worth that 90 seconds right there.
Yeah. The drive to Charlotte, the traffic, the parking.
Whatever it was, that 3 minutes made it all worth it.
And you don't get that in your den. Unless Leaky's in your den. And how often does that happen? not that often.
Guessing very rarely.
Unless you're Mrs. Black.
That's right.
It doesn't occur.
So thank you, Dusty. And we always love stories again as CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com. Adam, anything else from you this fine day?
No.
All right. We're going to go. We're going to let Dante Calabria. I can't change it. Even going back, I'd said Natron several times. I can't deprogram my mind.
That interview with Nate was very good.
If you haven't heard it, I would suggest that is. I mean, I really think 99% of our interviews are really good, but really enjoyed. In fact, I thought both the ones last week, Quentin Thomas and Natron Means, were both really good interviews, worth listening to if you haven't, or if maybe sometimes you don't listen, whatever it is. I would listen to those two. I think they were both really good this past week. Enjoy Dante today as well. And we're going to have more great guests coming up for you later this week. Boom. Wish, bang, boom. That's how the radio open should have started on Friday, but it didn't. I can justify that. All right, we're going to let Dante and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Dante Calabria. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meals served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Green.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.